with our NFL insider from CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. He is Jason Lockenfora. Jay, I guess just first off, your thoughts on brand new Allegiant Stadium and what we saw last night between the Raiders and the Saints.
Yeah, I mean, look, these new facilities are obviously top-notch, pretty stellar. It's hard to get a great feel for them with nobody there, and obviously not the way anybody thought they would be opening. But, look, they're going to be crown jewels for the league, and we're going to see a lot of big events held there, and, you know, not just NFL games, but and not just Super Bowls, but probably, you know, college, collegiate, national championships of all varieties. Once we're back into sort of a normal state of events again, at least certainly in this country, which who knows when that's happening. But, yeah, I mean, look, they look beautiful on TV. You can tell that they're going to be destination places for home fans and visiting fans as well. You know, as for the game itself, hats off to the Raiders. Did not see that coming. I know that Drew Brees is slowing down, but I thought the Saints' defense and run game would be enough to carry the day against the suspect Raiders' defense. Drew Brees had even less to offer than I thought. Emmanuel Sanders seems to have nothing to offer. They couldn't really get the ball downfield to anybody like Jared Cook or anything like that, and Kamara had a nice game, but he probably needed to touch the ball 12 to 15 more times if they were going to win that thing, because he was their best option in the pass game and obviously the run game. So I don't know about the Saints, man. I don't want to go all hot take. I don't want to go too crazy too soon, but we've seen Drew Brees for the last couple of years kind of looking like he's playing on fumes. And remember, last year he had about 6 weeks where he didn't play. You know, he had the issue with the thumb and the hand, and so it's not like he had the normal grind last year, and he still seemed to hit a wall. And then he sat there in Minnesota after the game when they lost in the playoffs and talked like a dude who's probably never going to play again, and then said, I need a month to decide, and then took almost that full month to decide. And now he looks again like the guy who has been sort of limping down the stretch in these last couple of January. So I think it's a real thing. I think he's telling you he can't really push the ball down the field anymore, and he's seeing ghosts a little bit, and for the first time in his career, his size and stature looks like it's an issue. He's not seeing the field the same way. He's not as mobile as he once was and able to create things. And I think teams know how to defend them. Now, the real problem is the defense, and maybe that was just a one-off. But if you would have told me before that game that Cam Jordan's going to be on national TV going against the third-string right tackle and you're never going to hear his name called in the broadcast, I would have said, well, God forbid, he must have got hurt. He must have joined the you know, the Legion of Walking Wounded, because so many guys got hurt. And no, he was totally healthy. He just didn't impact the game. So I didn't see that coming. I thought that was going to be a game that the Saints were able to take care of, and I was dead wrong.
While we're talking about those two teams, their head coaches are added to the list of coaches that have been fined for not wearing masks on the sideline in week two after a strongly worded memo was handed out after week one. Jay, I guess just your thought on the $100,000 fine for the five coaches, $250,000 to the team. And do we see that number stay flat? Does it raise or rise with repeated offenses and actions? Or what's your read on the fine situation with the no face cover?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this on the NFL Today on Sunday, that the league was serious about this. It wasn't issuing any more warnings. That memo that went out last week was the last warning, and they were coming for dudes' paychecks, and they obviously were. And there wasn't nearly the degree of compliance that they expected. So I would be surprised if things aren't ratcheted up for repeat offenders. That's generally how it works for players and everybody else. I don't know why it wouldn't apply here. I don't see the league reversing course, because COVID hasn't been an issue. Like, the protocols they put in place work. Now, whether you think they're over the top, whether you think they're unnecessary on a sideline when players aren't wearing them, but whatever, a lot of these coaches are older. They have pre-existing conditions. They're more susceptible to it. And the league and its lawyers and doctors spent months, you know, hundreds of hours a week figuring this out with the NFLPA and coming up with things that they know, and it's proven through this period of time, the whole preseason and 3 weeks of the regular season to work. And no one's going to get hurt wearing a mask. And if you think it's overkill, so be it, but it can't possibly hurt. It's not going to do anything. It's not spreading the thing. So I will be very interested to see what the sidelines look like next week and what the next step is for some of these teams, because I think they know at the league office that all these guys are making pretty good money, and owners have a way of making these guys right. But you start taking away draft picks, you start affecting field position, you start throwing a 15-yard flag on the field. And look, I don't know that it's coming to this, and I haven't heard any of this. I'm just throwing it out there. If you really want to get their opinion, make it a 15-yard flag. You'll see everybody, you know, in bubble wrap. They'll be covered from head to toe like a mummy. Trust me. So I would expect, Will, them to ratchet it up. To what degree? I'll probably know more at the end of the week. It's one of the things I'm working on reporting on.
Jay, you mentioned it. There's been hardly any positive test results. It's been obviously a huge talking point in training camp in the last couple of weeks leading into the regular season. You say that, you know, some maybe look at it as over the top. I guess what's your take on how things have been handled when it comes to the coronavirus through 2 weeks of regular season play?
I think it's been amazing. I mean, these numbers are absolutely jaw-dropping. I mean, they released the numbers from the 13th to the 19th. There wasn't anything. No new confirmed player cases, no new confirmed coach cases. So it's working. I mean, it's undeniable. I mean, no one in their wildest dreams, including, you know, Dr. Alan Sills, their chief medical officer, who I've talked to pretty much every week through this thing, thought it was going to work this well. Thought the numbers would be this low when you're talking about this many people conducting the kind of physical activities they're conducting. So I don't see the league changing its tune at all, because there are billions of dollars at stake, and this is going really well. And yeah, you're not going to get the money from the full stands and all that, but if they can get through this full season and set themselves up for the massive TV contracts that are almost negotiated now to come in early January, then you start painting a much rosier picture about the financial landscape of this league. And let's face it, that's ultimately, you know, these owners are in this to make money.
He is Jason Lockenfor, our NFL insider from CBS and CBSSports.com. Joins us twice a week here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960. Jay, we got to talk about the biggest story, and that is the injury rule day on Sunday in Week 2. By my count, 7 torn ACLs, over a dozen key players lost for significant time, if not the season. What's your feel on all the injuries that have piled up? Is it too simple to connect it to a non-existent preseason or a non-normal offseason? I guess just what's your read on all these injuries through 2 weeks of play?
I mean, I think if you're looking for connective tissue, the one thing that I would point to is the 49ers, a lot of non-contact or limited contact injuries on that field at MetLife that some of the Steelers were complaining about the week before, and that the 49ers have to play on again this coming Sunday, you know, this time opposing the Giants there and not the Jets. Other than that, Will, I don't know, man. You know, I don't. Most of these guys, Saquon Barkley, what would he have carried? Twice in the preseason, maybe? You know, they wouldn't have had much of a role. ACLs and stuff like that, I mean, are you going to be that much more fortified or steeled by a few more practices or, you know, OTAs? I mean, maybe, I guess. But, unfortunately, things just happen sometimes. And this was obviously a slew of players and a slew of great players. And if you were watching, you know, games in real time, you know, during what we would call the 1 o'clock window here on the East Coast, or for you guys, the 11 a.m. window on Sunday morning, I mean, there was a period of 45 minutes where every 5 minutes somebody was being carted off and somebody was suffering what clearly looked like an apparent, you know, Achilles or ACL season-ending injury. And, you know, that it's terrible and it's unfortunate, but it's a violent game. And those things happen, all the time, maybe not in this rapid succession. But, you know, by the end of the year, there's going to be a ton of guys who, you know, required season-ending surgery. So I don't know that you can draw too many conclusions from it just yet. And I don't know that a few preseason games, and let's face it, we're never going to see 4 again anyway. I mean, I think once we get around to preseason football again, whenever that is, I think it's going to be 2 games at the most and maybe 1 game and 1 scrimmage. So how much difference would that have made? My gut instinct is negligible, but, I mean, I'm obviously not a doctor, and I don't have any data in terms of a study in front of me, but I think it's just bad luck.
You mentioned it. Niners were hammered by the injury bug. I mean, they lost Solomon Thomas and Nick Bosa to season-ending torn ACLs, both on that defensive line and huge in their rotation. Bosa, one of the best defensive ends in football, and that division already stacking up is one of the best, if not the best, in football. How do all these injuries affect San Fran, and I guess where do you now put them? As I mentioned, at the NFC West, you got three teams at 2-0.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think of all these injuries, the one that's going to be the most resonate, sort of the most profoundly, is going to be Bosa. I mean, that's a team that, you know, they came into the year banged up on offense and Kittle and some of this stuff, and the offensive line's a little long in the tooth. But you know Kyle Shanahan can run the football with that outside zone scheme that he learned from his dad. And if that D-line is what we're used to it being, they're still going to win a bunch of football games. Well, the equation changes greatly when that D-line isn't what it was and you can't get a pass rush with three or four. It changes everything. And usually teams that tend to get this hit with injuries this soon tend to stay hurt. So I think the 49ers are in a bad way. And the other one that's kind of a little below the radar, but I think because it's a potentially good team that was already thin at the position, is Malik Hooker, the safety for the Colts, who was the one guy in that back unit who had some real elite upside potential. And they weren't playing tremendous football with him, but you take him out of it this early and what they expected him to do, the hybrid role he was in, I think that's significant for a team that I think could have, you know, could make a little noise in the AFC. I mean, Saquon Barkley's a big name, and I feel terribly for him, and he's a great guy. The Giants are going to win four or five games with him, you know? I mean, without him, unfortunately, you know, that's the way it goes. But I think if you're looking for guys who, you know, an injury situation that could sway the balance of power in a division or in a conference or in the league, you know, I think you're thinking along the right lines, unfortunately, for 49ers fans. And that's what went on in San Francisco and maybe to a lesser degree Indianapolis.
Boy, there's going to be some bad football played at MetLife this year, Jay.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked a lot about this through the summer. The New York teams outside of the one in Western New York absolutely stink. And then you talk about them being bad teams that are now, you know, loaded with injuries. You got even more of a problem.
No doubt. Sticking in the NFC West, Kyler Murray looks like he's taking a step in year two. The Cardinals are 2-0, and they're set up nicely. Lions, Panthers, Jets, their next three opponents. What's your read on Cliff Kingsbury's team here in Arizona?
I'm bullish on them. I picked them as a wild card going into the season and thought they would surprise some teams. My only trepidation with even picking them as a wild card was the defense. You know, I thought offensively they're going to be a juggernaut. If they could just be a smidge better on defense, just a little bit, then they could probably get to 9 wins and squeak their way in. Well, they've been better than a smidge better on defense. They look like a real unit. Patrick Peterson's back. Chandler Jones. Nobody has more sacks in the NFL than him since 2012. You know, you start to look at a Buda Baker running around all over the place making plays. Even Hassan Reddick, who looked like a bust 2 years ago, and even last year, they've gotten him involved. If they're an average defense, with what I think they're going to be able to do with Kyler Murray, they could be, you know, in a hard out, even a hard out late in the year. Now, they're not incredibly deep, and they're going to have to avoid injury. But I mean, Kyler Murray is just electric. I mean, you know, Hopkins, you knew that was going to happen. I mean, preseason or not, that dude's good for 12 catches a week. And they found the running game with Kenyon Drake last year, and that maintained. That continued. So, yeah, I think the Cardinals are for real.
Scott Morrow, Jason Lacanfora from CBS Sports, CBSSports.com, joins us twice a week, talk all things NFL here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960. I got to ask you, Jay, about the biggest Sunday collapse. Does the Hands team in Atlanta not know the rules of an onside kick, or were they just thinking that it looks cool to look at the ball, or what's
it might
what
be the Hands team,
in
Will,
Dallas?
But it ain't the Brains team, that's for sure. It ain't the rule book team. I have to think they hadn't reviewed it lately, and once a couple guys let it pass, you know, Julio and a few others, then I guess everybody stupidity became contagious. I mean, it's pretty staggering to lose a game that way, even by you know, Falcon standards, that is an unforgivable loss. I mean, it's professional football. This isn't, you know, this isn't high school. This isn't, the JV. I mean, anyone could have fallen on that ball and they still win. And then just for you know, Dan Quinn to have come into the season under as much duress as he's under and this under the gun, then to lose a game that way where, I mean, I don't care how you spin it. The billionaire who owns the team, you're not going to convince him that that wasn't bad coaching, that that wasn't, you know, players not being prepared to do the simplest football activity of the day, which literally could have secured the win. I just think with how things have gone there since the Super Bowl, nothing lasts forever. This has lasted way longer than anybody expected, but people in the know in Atlanta are basically just waiting for Arthur Blank to do the inevitable, and maybe that comes at the bye week, or, you know, he really loves Dan Quinn, so maybe he doesn't come until next year, but, you know, starting 2-6 and then winning a bunch of games in December is not going to be enough this time.
Final one for you, Jay, and we started talking about a quarterback. We'll finish talking about a different quarterback. More of a game manager role in week one as Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick went heavy on the run against the Dolphins, but we saw a pretty flashy performance from Cam Newton on prime time to close out week two on the Sunday edition against the Seattle Seahawks. Now, they came up short and lost the game, but what's your takeaway for two games under center from Cam Newton in New England?
Not surprised in a bit. I said you could pencil him in for double-digit carries every week. He was my preseason comeback player of the year and someone who I'm hearing, you know, from people in that organization, they think he's going to be around there more than just this year. Remember, they could tag him. You know, there's no preclusion in that contract for no franchise tag in 2021. So, I mean, they could play him out this year for $1 million, squat on him next year for, you know, whatever, 27, 28, whatever that number turns out to be, and then work a long-term deal or just, you know, their payroll for next year is one of the lowest in the league, and they're in like cap hell now, but all that dead cap goes away next year. So I think that's going to be a beautiful marriage. They know what they're doing with him. They know what they have. Josh McDaniels drafted Tebow in the first round. I mean, Tebow is nothing compared to this guy. I mean, but he was willing to completely sort of transform their identity at that point for Tebow. So turning it over for Cam is no stretch. They don't have to create new plays. I mean, they already know what they're doing. They've seen what the Ravens have been doing. They've seen what Seattle's done with some of their RPO looks with Russell, especially earlier in his career when Bevel was the coordinator. And they've studied all that stuff. He studied the college game like crazy. I mean, he talks to Nick Saban probably more than he talks to his wife. So this is not a stretch for them.
Jay, good stuff, man. As always, appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you on Friday, man.
Sounds good. Thanks so much. Have a good week.